roses and violets, lush as mint. My own sweet time, did it teach what I found? Only recognize simple things anymore. I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated, I don't wanna be defeated.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome. I'm your host, Shane Told, as I take you into the backstage conversations that I have with other lead singers. This week, it wasn't exactly a backstage conversation I had. It was over the telephone, and a little bit different this week because I just spoke to this week's guest, Mr. Ace Enders of the early November. I just talked to him like an hour ago, and the conversation went so well. I was so stoked on it that I just want to put it up right now. I don't want to wait. I know I have others in the queue. I've got some really great episodes, actually. But something about talking to him, it was really special, and I just wanted this to go up now. Because this is my show and I do whatever the fuck I want, I'm putting it up right now. And this is a good episode. I've known Ace since 2006. That's a long time, man. That's over 13 years ago that I've known this guy. And I've known him as kind of a quieter guy, keep to himself on tour kind of guy, you know, a very, very nice guy, a guy I've had some great conversations with, but nothing like this. He opens up, we talk about some incredible things, and I cannot wait for you to hear this episode. And they have a record coming out, the Lilac, September 27th on Rise Records. I got a chance to hear this entire record. The two songs they've released are both great, but this entire record absolutely slams on a lot of different levels, man. We talk about this record a lot. I can't wait for y'all to hear it. And I know, damn, we still got like a month, but this is just, wow. This record is incredible. By far the best early November record, in my opinion. Maybe the best thing Ace has ever put out. So very, very excited about that. So yeah, sit back, relax. This is going to be a good one. A very, very good one. Before we get into it, I want to remind you guys, you can always email me. My email address is leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I read all my emails. I respond to as much of it as I can. And yeah, so feel free to hit me up, add me on social media. The podcast Instagram, I think we're almost at 12,000, which is pretty cool. I mean, I try to post some, you know, interesting things on there, but for the most part, you know, it's kind of just like, oh, here's the thing. But I think now that I've realized that a lot of people are actually, you know, going to the Instagram page and checking it out, maybe I'll start posting some more interesting, you know, things on there. And yeah, so check it out. If you don't follow already, it's at Lead Singer Syndrome. Very, very easy. So what's up with me, you ask? Well, my arm, which was broken, went through, well, it had a little bit more trauma. I decided when I got home that we had a little bit of a plumbing issue in the house. So I decided to take it upon myself with my broken arm to do the plumbing, and I aggravated it and it got a lot worse. And today, finally, now it's been a week and my arm is feeling quite a bit better. And I think now I can maybe even play guitar. So that's exciting because I'd love to write some songs and, you know, and do the thing that I do. If you were wondering about my arm, yeah, I had a bit of a scary time, but I think it's going to be okay. Shout out to Dr. McCaffrey and everyone at the Windsor Hospital. You guys were all very, very lovely to me. I want to give a big shout out to our new sponsor, Iconic. That's EYECONIC. Iconic.com/LSS. That's where you're going to want to go. If you wear glasses, if you wear contacts, they've got the best prices. They've got the virtual try-on app, which is really cool. And even if you're like me, if you're having some trouble with your eyes, they can hook you up with a doctor no matter where you live. I got my eyes checked. I tried on the glasses virtually online. They're coming to me. It's very exciting. They've got the best prices and you can save more with my promo code LSS. You're going to hear more about this later in the show. Don't you worry, but I do want to thank them for their support. They are awesome. Again, the link iconic.com/LSS, promo code LSS. And if you also want to help the show in a different kind of way, you can check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. That link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. You go over there for $6 a month or a little bit more. You get hooked up with bonus episodes, bonus content, an amazing community. We hang out all over the world. This is really, really cool. It's awesome. Just check it out. leadsingersyndrome.com/LSS. We're over 350 members now. Shout out to everybody new. There's so many new people joining. I love it. I love it. And I loved hanging out with you guys every single day on the last tour. So check it out. The All Access Club. leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. And hit the subscribe button too, right? What do they say? Mash the subscribe button. Isn't that what the YouTubers say? I'm like half a YouTuber. I'm like YouTuber without the tube part. I'm just the audio. Yeah, anyway, yes. Hit the subscribe button. If you like the show, go on iTunes, leave a review. This stuff does matter. Tell a friend, tell a loved one. Thank you so much again for listening. And here it is. We're going to talk to Ace. What an interview. I love this guy. Here it is. My conversation with Ace Enders on Lead Singer Syndrome.
Ever so sweet, you baked it in cakes for me. When you left behind, it hurts my teeth. Bringing the past with the postcards you sent for me.
What's up, man?
What's up, dude? How you doing?
I'm fantastic. Dude,
I love to hear your voice.
Oh, man. I was going to say the same thing. I know. It's it's been a lot of minutes. It's been like millions, potentially millions of minutes.
Yeah, it certainly has, man. I can't even remember. Like, it's definitely been a while.
Yeah, like, but the last time, like, I remember us playing shows together was, like, literally 2006.
Yeah, dude, that probably is right. We might have crossed paths on like a Warped Tour or something between there, but not. Yep. Or Soundwave, I think, the last time I.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, something like
that's,
that. Yeah.
That's absolutely probably what it was.
Yeah.
And yeah, and you're always so, like, you're such a quiet guy and you're always like, you kind of keep to yourself a little bit. And I always like love talking to you, especially when I could, you know, pick your brain, but I always felt like I never had the chance.
Yeah.
So this is some redemption for me today, man.
Awesome. Well, me too. Then I love the. I am very, very reserved a lot of times when, especially out on tour.
Oh, yeah.
I get like in my head most of the time, but it's. I'm psyched.
Awesome, man, dude. Well, damn, it's so much to talk about, and you've been busy. I mean, you've always been busy. You're like the most prolific dude ever. we're not going to talk about the triple record just yet, but I want to get there. Yeah. but let's talk about just starting off what's going on now. I mean, the new record, I had Rise Records. They sent it to me.
Nice.
And what an album, man. You should be very proud.
I appreciate that. I am. It was by far the longest I've ever spent on a record just because of, like, it was going to come out. It wasn't going to come out. It was like pushed back so many times, but, I'm fired up about it. I'm pretty psyched.
Yeah, it's the press release that the publicist sent over. It was, I don't want to say confusing, because it made a lot of sense in terms of the expression and what the record was about. You know, talking about a family member with an addiction problem, and then okay, I get what this record's sort of all about. And then there's some vagueness in the statement that says kind of like, you ended up sort of going down a dark path and then the record turned dark, but then you changed the record.
Yeah.
Is that accurate? Cause well, that's what I got from the statement.
Yeah. I mean, it's no secret that I'm a fan of concepts. And I think I wrote it originally from the angle of someone trying to help a loved one, you know, and then within trying to help and, you know, like if you have somebody in your life or, you know, a friend or whatever it may be, like it's from the angle of that. Like if you have mm-hmm. someone that you're trying to help and you just, you hit a wall at some point when you can't, you feel like you can't do anything. And I think we all, you know, get there at one time or another where it's like you unintentionally sort of end up going down a similar path, maybe a different way, just because it's like, it gets to a point where it like, you don't know how to react to it other than like trying to understand it. And I think,
right.
You know, for me being a songwriter and whatnot, like I've been in the past since, you know, we've seen each other since like, you know, so many years ago, like I've even trying to be competitive in that own, in that world and try and stay afloat and support a family and all that stuff. It's like, and deal with all these things that life has to throw to you. It's like you end up doing things maybe and to try and, I don't want to say cope, but like be your best self, be your like, always be competitive in a world where it's really, you're not meant to sustain that type of competitive thing. And I think the record for me was that dark journey. And it the initial concept was falling into like a reflection of falling into that sort of dark thing that you're trying to pull somebody out of because you're trying, you can't understand it. And, Yeah. And then it changed. And then I snapped out of it and changed it because it was way too depressing.
So when you say you changed it, and the great thing about this podcast is that I can ask you these questions and we can get deep and we don't have a time limit to discuss this. And this is the stuff that kind of gets lost in interviews. So when you mean that you changed it, do you mean that you scrapped songs, wrote different songs? Did you use different instrumentation with existing songs? Did you change lyrics? Did you change the performances? How exactly did you change it?
I would say in every sense, it was changed. A lot of the songs did end up to be the original way, but it was really like a journey because I know that like probably, you know, most people who create, you go and you think like, oh yeah, it was this journey or whatever it was, you know, this big dramatic thing. But right. for me, it was a type of like, you know, figuring out on many levels, like what I am and what I can offer to just being music industry person, like what I can be, because my journey since the start of this record, like I've had like people offer me solo record deals and being like, dude, this song's going to be a hit. I've had songs placed on like this is going to be this one that breaks you and this is going to be it. And then like those deals fall apart. Like, and you live this roller coaster of like, oh man, I'm finally going to be able to take to be above water. And like, it's all going to be great. And it's, you know, and all of that is submerged into this record. And for me, it's like, It was originally, like I said, like just, it came out way dark and everybody that I showed was like, you, it's sick, but it, at the same time, it like, I don't like how it makes me feel. and I'm like, you know what, that's not how I want to leave it. And that's not how I, you know, as a reflection of myself, that's not like how I live. You know, I always try and like find a way out. And I think, the you know, I did instrumentation was way different. There was songs like on the last batch where it was like I would just like make a beat like with this like a almost like a hip hop style beat, and I would just let that go, and I would put a vocal melody over that, and then I would put a bass guitar on it to the groove of the beat, and then I would put acoustic drums on it, and then I would put guitar last probably. And it was like I would write songs just in completely different ways just to see how far I could get.
No, that is that is an interesting approach to songwriting too, because, you know, the way that we are sort of, I think, brought up writing songs is that you're a guitar player first, and I know that you are too.
Yeah.
I am too. And then you kind of write a riff, and then the afterthought is, okay, well, what am I going to say or sing over this? And that's the classic way everyone was taught to write a song. Or figured out how to write a song. And now with technology is a big part of it. You know, it is really interesting that you can write or even just use some kind of beat, for lack of a better word, add like a top line, you know, melody, vocal over it, and then you can go backwards and work on the instrumentation to vibe, you know, how you want it to vibe. That's, it's a really, really like, it's a, an approach that I think myself as a songwriter, I'm just sort of starting to scratch the surface of that approach.
Yeah,
but it seems to be working for you. So that's because this record, dude, this might be, you can get I think weird. This is my favorite early November record. I think absolutely.
Wow. That's, man, I love that.
Is it your favorite?
I think it is. I probably say that every time, but I think this is, I really think it is though. It's like, it's definitely the most, it's not perfect. It doesn't sound perfect. And I think that's why, I mean, it's the closest representation of what I am. Actually where I am. I think that, so for that, it's my favorite.
Dude,
for sure.
I love that you say that about it. And I had a question in here, particularly about, well, I guess it's the, almost the title track, the Lilac. And that song, it channels a lot of pain. I mean, you can even hear in the performance of the acoustic guitar at the beginning, it's not perfect. You could have played it better, but it has such a vibe. And then at the end, you know, after this, I mean, what a performance vocally, then it comes in with this other instrumentation that's like literally out of tune.
The out of tune trumpet.
It's literally out of tune. And, you know, obviously it's not hard to, you could literally throw an auto tune plug in on that in like 5 seconds and it would be, you know, it would be in tune. But you chose not to. Is that a reflection of the record, and it's just the vibe and the you know, you talk about a journey.
Absolutely.
What was the decision behind that?
That is like the lilac specifically. I mean, lilac, the flower, means like purity, and that's why I went with that for the title. And I think with that song, it's so bare. And I when that out of tune, that like sort of drunken sounding trumpet comes in at the end over like the pitchy vocals. It's like, to me, like that was just a moment of, you know, it was a very real moment. And the performer, I didn't play the trumpet on it. I wish I did, but like the guy who played, he totally understood what to do. He's in the band and he's like, he's a fantastic musician. He really like captured that moment of like, I was like, I want it to sound like drunk, like gasping, not like, you know, like make that happen. And he really did. It is a reflection of what that moment is. And it's, it's funny. I'm glad you picked up on that though. I love that you picked that part out.
Oh yeah. It was awesome. It was after getting through, you know, not getting through the record, like just kind of, I was kind of on the edge of my seat, the whole record and, the peaks and valleys of it. Especially the two songs that you've released so far. I'm sorry, the titles are, I'm not the best with titles.
Hit by a Car and I Dissolve. Yeah, I'm
exactly.
Not terrible.
Those songs were great, and I totally understand why they were kind of pulled out as singles. But I really think that the rest of the record is maybe as strong or stronger. And I was kind of surprised because I heard those songs first. But what I just thought was cool was just how you had this. It was almost like a reflection of life. You have these days, even if you're depressed as hell, you still have these kind of bouncy days. You still have these days where there's moments that are like, oh, this is kind of like cool, you know, and then your whole world comes crumbling down. That's how I felt listening to the record. Wow. And then that last song, man, I was just like, I was moved, like seriously moved. It's funny, and I don't want to compare it with this, and also it sucks because people are going to be like, I want to hear this song, and they're not going to be able to hear it until September 27th on Rise Record. That's when the record comes out. But you know, I almost got, when that trumpet came in, I was almost like, oh no, is this going to be like a Bieber Love Yourself thing? You know, like I was like, oh no, this like idea is, well, it's just been done in a very mainstream song. And then I was like, oh my God, he totally was able to pull that, you know.
Right.
Like, no, he didn't pull the same rabbit out of the hat. It was, you know, it was an amazing, amazing part. So anyways, I feel like I'm just going a little gaga over your new record, but no, but I wanted,
dude,
you
I
to know how
I'll
much how much
I'll
I appreciate it and how amazed I am with your new stuff.
Definitely means a lot. Thank you. I do appreciate the kind words for sure.
So, okay, well, let's talk about geez, I don't even know where to start, man. But I guess let's just go back to the beginning, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I love to do that. You know, like I said, I've known you for a long time. I don't know how much I really know about you. Like, I don't know why they call you Ace. Why do they call you Ace?
It's my initials. Ace is my initials.
Okay.
So my name is, yeah, Arthur Carl Enders the Third. So the, initials, and that's what everybody just always called me that. My dad was that. His dad was that.
Okay.
And from birth, pretty much, that's just what everybody called me.
So your dad's also called Ace too?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that must be confusing around the household.
Yeah. And now my son is also, I feel like I couldn't break the tradition. So I had to like do the same thing. And it's like, yeah, it's, you know, it gets confusing if you're out in a place, but it's, it works.
So when your wife is screaming Ace, you don't know who she's screaming at.
Yeah. No, that's it becomes interesting, but, yeah.
And so, okay. So you grew up in New Jersey. Everybody knows that.
Yes.
You know, obviously that's what part of New Jersey are you from actually?
I'm from South Jersey. So
like
it's,
Philly?
Like 20 minutes from Philly, 20 minutes from Atlantic City, right in the bottom middle there. Very, not too far from the shore, the capital of the world. It's, a lot of farms and whatnot.
So what was your family structure like? You were growing up, you know, obviously you were close to a lot of things. Obviously being 20 minutes from a major city like Philadelphia, you were able to be exposed to things going on. You weren't like sheltered, but it does sound like you were still in an area that was maybe a little more rural or suburban. So what was it kind of like for you as a kid with your family structure and like, what were you like in school?
Well, I mean, that is the kid me and like now me are very, I like to think at the core they have similarities, but it's an interesting thing for me to talk about because, you know, we reference how like I'm quiet on tour. Like I grew up as a very, secluded, individual. I had, not to harp on, you know, everybody's got things, but like I was, a classified student. I didn't have, I had a lot of learning disabilities and social problems. So like I was very much like kid in the classroom. You see, like, you might walk by the classroom with this one kid who, you know, but don't really. And it's, that's sort of how everybody knew me as a kid, because I couldn't, hang with the mainstream kids. So,
okay.
So that was me as a child and all through high school until I started, writing music. And then once I started writing music and realized that I had something that I could, you know, do with normal people. It was then like, you know, once I started touring and whatnot, where it was like, oh man, like I can have a normal life. It gave me confidence and sort of made me become who I am now, which is very different, but it also plays into why when I'm in social situations, like on tour, like I just revert to that like quiet kid sometimes because I'm like, that's just what I was used to my entire life. So, being young me is like very secluded, very like, you know, trying to figure out how to exist. And then, yeah, it was, you know, in this pretty small town. And it was,
How did you get into music? How did you start, deciding you wanted to play or sing or write? How'd that happen?
Well, I knew that I wanted to write. I was like, I guess when I was like 14, my stepdad had a guitar and I started learning how to play it. I'm left-handed, but we had a right-handed guitar. And he's like, look, if you want to play it, like you got to learn how to play right-handed because there's no way we can get a left-handed guitar.
Right.
So, we were all right, but we didn't, you know, like that definitely wasn't in the budget. So,
You didn't say like I could just be the next Hendrix and play like that.
Yeah. That would, I mean, I don't think that would have really still wouldn't have sold him, but maybe it would have, you know, I should have tried it. I wasn't that quick, but, started teaching myself. That's pretty much it. And
it's funny,
there's
another band from New Jersey that I used to be a big fan of. Well, I'm still a big fan of, but I used to, you know, when I was a kid, they were one of my favorite bands called Big Wig. Do you remember that band?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So they're from Jersey too. And they had a guitar player in their band who had play, a left-handed guitar, right-handed, but didn't change the strings around.
That blows my mind. That stuff always blows my mind when I see people do that.
Yeah. Like, so he just like didn't know how to right-handed guitar around, was like, oh, well, I'm left-handed. So he played it left-handed, but you know, it would
upside
just
down.
Would be such a mind fuck. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, that's a like you're learning. Like that's an amazing thing. That's an amazing thing. Like coming out of that and then flipping the guitar around, that would just like, that'd be crazy.
It would. I know. But I wonder though, like if as a left-handed person, you have an advantage using your dominant hand for your fretting hand.
I mean?
That makes sense, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like I could do some weird stretches, I think, with my hand. I can't picture myself if I ever had to do it the other way. I can never picture myself playing left-handed. Like I just don't think it would make sense. Like drums I do right. I pretty much do like musically everything right-handed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
When you play drums, and are you a pretty competent drummer?
I'm decent. I'm not like not flashy, but I play on a bunch of do a bunch of session stuff for people.
Yeah, because my friend Caleb from Beartooth, he's left-handed too, and he's the same. He plays guitar right-handed, and he plays drums right-handed. But when he plays drums, he does a lot of like strange things, like because he tends to lead with his left hand when he does a fill, which a lot of people don't do. Do you do that too?
Oh man, I drive people. I feel bad because like if I'm writing a part for somebody and I'll be like, oh, just do this part. And they're like, yeah, that part's cool, but that doesn't make any sense how to do that. Like it's frustrating, but it's I feel like that might be a common thing that lefties do.
Absolutely. So what music was inspiring you then? Like, obviously, you know, the music you've made is, I mean, it's you can file it under punk, like I guess.
Yeah.
Or you are, you know, you've been on punk labels, like pop punk labels or whatever. But a lot of the stuff you write and have always written is kind of more, I don't know the word. I don't want to say mainstream because that's not accurate. But it's not like you're not trying to tear people's heads off, like you know, like a big wig or something. You know,
true.
So what kind of inspired you early on to write and play and all that and sing?
I think the thing that made me most more than anything, like I loved punk music as a kid because it was like, it's what made me want to be in a band and like, you know, do the whole thing. But I think the most inspiring thing, like as far as songwriting and like just, I was moved by watching this Pearl Jam Yield documentary of them making Yield. And it was like one of those things, like I watched it and I was like, oh my God, like it seems like so cool. Like you could have all these different thoughts and be these different, like it was just a very, like it hit me at the right time. And I always give that credit because it's like, you know, it's, I know people like dog on Pearl Jam a lot, but it was one of those things that just hit me at the right moment that made me want to, just be a weird artist. And it's, sort of how it ended up. But I mean, all of like the young, like, when I was I think my first show was like Lagwagon and like, you know, all the, like, I was very into old punk and like Choking Victim and whatnot as a kid. But, I mean, I definitely give the Pearl Jams though. The most. Yeah.
Pearl Jam. What a band. I mean, they like they're one of those examples of a band that really, like, there's no rules. Like, they're so big. They play arenas, like multiple arena shows pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
People go crazy. They don't play hits, you know? Like, they play whatever songs they want.
Yeah.
And they don't make videos. They haven't made music videos in, like, 20 years. And it's crazy. Like,
it's crazy. They fought, like, the big company. Like, they really
the Ticketmaster thing.
Right,
when they
the
did
Ticketmaster
that.
Thing. Yeah, they were like, it always like seemed like their moral compass was just on point, and I always loved them for that. It's like, you know, they could have done things that were, you know, they could have just taken advantage. I mean, I guess they never had to because they were always huge from the start. But
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. When money's not an issue, I guess you could do whatever you want at all the time. But yeah, I mean, it's cool though to see a band just do that. That's rock and roll,
absolutely,
man.
Absolutely, absolutely. So okay, yeah. So you start this band the early November, which you're still yes. in. There's been some bumps in the road, of course. A couple real big bumps.
Yes.
The story goes, and I, you know, this is kind of the Wikipedia version, but I like to start there and see how accurate it is.
I love it.
You got together with some buds. You made some songs. You sent them to literally one label, which was Drive Thru Records.
Yes.
And you got signed, and then Ever So Sweet blew up, and you recorded it like 15 times. And there you go. I mean, that's is that at all accurate?
That's pretty good. That's pretty darn close. I was in like this band started. I think early November started because I was in this band called the June Spirit, which is another month theme. But anyway, we took a meeting with Drive Thru, and I had that was like my first jump into like me being the front guy, me like writing and singing all the songs. And we took a meeting with Drive Thru, so I knew of, you know, the owner, and mm-hmm. so like that was like in my head. But like when I went to record those songs, the guy who, I forget where we were, but it was like a big studio, like in North Jersey. We get there, we record, we do the whole week, blah blah blah, make the whole EP. He's got like management, he wants to line up and everything, and I went to cut vocals, and he's like, oh, you should, you know what? You need vocal rest for like a week because we've been like working you hard this week. He's like, just go home for a week, come back and finish them. And I'm like, oh, okay, sick. I'll do that. And then at the end of the week, the band actually came to pick me up, and I thought we were like, you know, getting ready to go back. And they showed me the finished copy with a new singer that he had convinced them to get while I was on vocal rest. So,
wow, what a snake.
Yeah, it was intense. It's like, you know, you learn those things from the music business. And that was like my first one. But we had met with Drive Thru, so I had sort of known Richard a little bit.
Yeah.
And it made it, a little bit easier for when the early November was ready to go. And, you know, my wife was actually the one that reached out to him and set up the meeting with the early November and everything. So it's kind of cool, you know, how it all happened. And
that's crazy. Yeah, what happened to those guys and those band and that band and those songs and everything?
They got signed, they put out a couple records, and then they broke up.
That was the June Spirit? That was the name of the band? Wow. Yep. Wow, what a story. That's crazy. Isn't that one of those things too though, you wonder what would have happened if you know? I mean, but
I would have never learned to sing if that didn't happen. Yeah, that's the thing.
Guess, right?
I was bad. I give him credit for having the guts to do it and like making a business choice at that young of an age. But, I don't think I would have learned to sing, and I don't think I would have been able to sort of like go through the, or at least have the determination at that point to be like, yo, I'm going to do this
on
my own.
So that happening to you was more motivating than breaking? Because feel like if that was me, I would have just been done. Like that, no, you know what I mean? That would have just broken me.
You would have dug deep. I think like right after that, within a week, I started early November, I started making new songs. I let them keep all the songs too. I was like, just keep them. I don't need them.
Right.
And I just went on. So it was
crazy, man. That's
good,
crazy.
Good for development.
That's crazy. But after that, with the new, you know, with the new band and stuff, it happened pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. It was only maybe like a couple of years or so.
Oh, it was a couple of years. Okay.
Yeah. Before we set up another meeting and got everything going. And it's probably a couple of years. And it wasn't incredibly long, but yeah.
Yeah, it seemed like it happened all pretty fast. Like you had this, you know, you put out these songs, and then you guys got some Warped Tour shows. I remember. I think I saw you play at Warped Tour, maybe.
Yeah,
and then, I mean, you must have been so young too. And then, you know, you were on that Brand New tour, you know, right before Brand New exploded.
Yes.
And then it seemed like this Ever So Sweet, which is a song I want to focus on because it's still, you know, a staple of your headline set and a song you've recorded a few times. That song seemed to resonate with people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the, I think people have always like, you know, it's like our campfire song. You know, if you've got one, like that's the one. It's the one that everybody knows. Like we just played this. We just went out with Newfound, and we toured with them like bunch of times before in the early 2000s, and like you know, it's crazy to see like we could play like energetic songs, whatever songs, and like people they'll have fun, they'll do their thing, but when you play Ever So Sweet, it's like, oh wait, everybody's gonna sing now, you know, and it's just one of those, it's one of those things that it has been, you know, just that moment in the set that like if you know the, you know, the whatever you want to call it, emo pop punk world, like that's, if you've heard one of our songs, that's probably the one that you've heard, you know?
So how do you feel about the song now? I mean, obviously you wrote it so long ago.
Yeah.
Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you tolerate it? Do you respect it?
I constantly try and figure it out. I constantly try and figure it out. It's the thing, like, I'm like, what happened at that time? I remember writing it. I remember like, I can vividly remember like thinking of the line and, you know, the Ever So Sweet one. And I'm like, what did it? What was it that made that happen? I don't know. I have no idea, but it, I don't hate it for sure. I love it because people love it. And I think if somebody comes up and they're like, yo, check out this tattoo. It's an Ever So Sweet tattoo with a leaf. I'm like, that's amazing that you decided to do that and that it impacted you in that way. So I love it for that. And that's why we put it on, we did, a couple of years ago, the 15 years acoustic thing where we just sort of like redid songs, just acoustic. And, because it's an important one.
Was that the third time you recorded it in studio?
Yeah. Because the first time was like, I didn't know the first one was going to come out. It was like the demo version of the song.
Yep.
And you know, when the record label was like, yeah, let's just do an acoustic EP. We have this version already. Okay. So that was one. Then we did on the full length. Mm-hmm. It was the opening track on The Room's Too Cold. And then the third time was with 15 years. So it's three times.
What was it like going back the third time recording it? And, you know, cause I, Silverstein, we just did a similar thing where we re-recorded 12 tracks from our first 10 years of being a band.
Yeah.
And when you do that again and you actually re-record it, it's not just a remaster, remix thing. It's like, this is a whole, you have to remember how you played the song. You go back and like, oh, how did that little guitar, you know, hammer on pull off go? And what did I do the first time? And, you know, I assume you probably went back and at least listened to the original versions for reference. But what was
not
it like? Just, oh, you did it for that one?
No, because I changed the bridge. I never liked the bridge. So I play it live differently, and I just like, I always do that, and I'm like, I'm not even gonna try and figure it out, because the cording in the bridge it was just so simple to me.
Yeah.
I mean, which isn't bad, but yeah. I didn't that's the only one that I didn't go back and have to like relearn, because I was like, I'm just gonna play it the live version.
Right. No, I love that you said I'm constantly trying to figure it out. And it's funny when that happens. And earlier in your career, you have, you know, that song for you, a song for me, shit.
Yeah.
Anyone else that has, you know, success as a band, they have those songs that are the ones that just sort of happened and people, and you try to figure out as a songwriter, well, like, well, how do I get that lightning in a bottle again? You know, what was it about that? And then you break it down and you say, well, it's just these simple chords and the simple melody and what is it about it? And it's funny, right? Cause
it's funny. It's frustrating. And it's like, I've had those thoughts keep me up at night. Like, like not being able to figure out, like you said, capture that lightning in a bottle. And it's a really interesting thing. And I think for me, what it comes down to is just a moment. And it's easy to recreate a song, but it's not easy to create a moment.
Yeah.
And that's where we were when that happened. It was in a moment. And it was, I think that's how I've come to peace with it.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So, you guys put out this triple album, which was kind of a crazy thing to do.
Yeah.
Looking back, it's even crazier. At the time, we all thought it was pretty crazy, you know, when we heard you were doing it. There was a lot of rumors back in the day. I have no idea if this is true, but it was that you were trying to get out of your drive-thru deal.
I love that rumor. If it were only true, it counted as one record.
Well, of course it counts as one record, but a lot of people thought, oh, it's going to count as three records, and they're going to be out of their deal. They signed like a four-album or five-album deal or whatever.
Yeah, six with nine options. But anyway,
But no, seriously, though, like what was going through your head? I mean, you're a prolific dude, obviously. But that is, I mean, do you ever wish you could go back and just put out the best 10 songs?
I did for a long time because, you know, I'll be the first to say, like, it's not perfect. And it's funny. I was just doing an interview yesterday talking about the same thing. And it, I know that it didn't come out perfect. And at the time I knew that it didn't come out perfect, but you know, it was like, it was a true test to me of like what I could do. And I think, at the moment when it was born, the idea of it was like, you know, I wanted to do something that would like, I wanted to make something that was artistic. I think I really wanted to do something that was to me valuable and not, and like how I was saying, like Pearl Jam and their set of morals. Like I wanted to do something for the reason of being able to do it, because I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. There's so many people out there who are way better than me that don't have what I have. And I think that's so true for so many artists. And it's like a way of proving to myself and to just the art of doing it, of like what it can, you know, like a different way to make it, you know, make sense to me. And I really wanted to push myself to make this piece of art. And, you know, it failed, but, you know,
well, that's,
To the sense of like the label, like to the sense of like it came out first week, did like, I think everybody was wanted it to do more. And I remember at the time, like being like, all right, yeah, first week was like, I think like 27 or 28,000 copies. And today would be amazing, you know.
I know. It's but so funny.
Yeah. But then was like, ooh, you know, we needed at least 40. And it was just like, you know, well, it's a large pill to swallow. And It's just one of those things, and I had a lot of demons with it for a long time.
But the record,
but I feel good about it.
The record cost more at the store too, didn't it? Like instead of it being $9.99 at Best Buy because it was like a triple disc, I think the label thought they could get away with more, right?
Yeah,
it was kind of like $14.99 or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, yeah.
That must have contributed to the numbers too.
It probably did. It probably had to help with it. I mean, it didn't help that also it was three discs, and one of the discs was full dialogue craziness. But you know, I will say that I've had people, like so many people, come up and be like, that's the thing that kept them as a fan, because it was so different and so it spoke to them in a way that was like, you know, that other things didn't. And the one thing that I'll say that I always like try is like, you know, I don't know that anybody else has ever done that. And if I can leave any stamp on the music world, is like, all right, yeah, I did. I had an opportunity one time to get a big budget and make something crazy and make a, you know, take that next logical step. And I decided to make a triple disc album, which like, you know, is whatever, but I don't think anybody else has done it yet. And
no,
I feel cool about that.
Well, a thing we talk about on this podcast pretty regularly is the whole, sophomore slump conversation. And I have a theory that no band has ever put out, you know, quote unquote, a bad second album and recovered from it.
Yeah.
And obviously if that, I mean, it's the case for you guys. I mean, you guys broke up like less than a year after that record came out.
Right.
So, you know, there's a case in point there. You know, so, I mean, it was a lot to to take on at that time. But was it the record that led to the breakup of the band? Was it other things? What exactly happened? Because I don't really remember, and I couldn't find now, like just a Google searching, like exactly what happened or what statement you made or anything.
Yeah, I don't remember what the statement was that we said, but it was, I don't know if the record really was the cause, but I think we always had like an inner battle happening, just because the differences of personalities and, you know, what happens and when money gets involved with things, and everybody's a good person. It's just like at the moment you're like searching for a reason or searching for your own, you know, how something to validate why you're doing what you're doing. And I think we got to a point where it had been, I think it was like something like 6 years that we had been touring at that point. Right. And it was very, or at least signed to Drive Through at that point. And it was, we knew that we had many records left under our deal. We knew that we were unhappy with, sort of how everything was working out. And I think it just felt easier to try and walk away from it.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I don't know. I mean, I love touring with you guys. I mean, back in those days.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody was great. Serge and Bill and Joe. And I mean, and that's a cool thing about your band too, is despite you guys, you know, going away and breaking up at a relatively early point in your career, you guys have kept the same lineup. Everybody's come back, right, in the fold, which is cool. I mean, that must speak to you as a kind of a band leader and as a songwriter and as a, you know, the guy steering the ship, that they have faith in you.
Yeah. And it's also opened up doors for everybody else. And I think that's probably to me, like, the coolest thing. Like, I know Sergio doesn't tour with us anymore. He's like, you know, it's everybody's life sort of, you know, changes in one way or the other, but I was able to, he wanted to really focus on his own thing. So I produced his solo record and like worked with him on it like for like a couple months, and like really was able to, you know, dig deep and like be still have that same connection with him, just now in the form of his own thing.
Right.
And Joe, he did just in the past like couple years decided that he doesn't want to tour, but he still manages the band. He's like, I want to be involved. It's just, this is how I can be involved and contribute the best way that I can. And it's you know, it's cool that like, even though those two guys don't tour anymore, they're still a part of it in some way. And Joe is like, obviously, extremely involved. I still have to talk to him like every single day about it. So it's like nothing has changed. And it's a cool thing. It is. It feels cool that at least everybody still wants to be around, or like in some way or another.
Awesome. And you talk about recording Sergio's music. You record bands all the time. That's kind of like your sort of 9 to 5, right? When you're not doing, you know, when you're on tour, obviously you have a big tour coming up in just like about a month or so. You go away, big headliner, which I want to make sure people check out. But doing that, do you enjoy that as much as you enjoy working on your own music? Because it's a whole different can of worms, right?
Yes, it is. It is a totally different thing, but I really do like genuinely enjoy it, and I feel very fortunate to be in the position I am with it, because it's, you know, it's great to, I find myself like tweaking things or like changing something in songs or giving bands advice and being like, oh wait, I can learn from that. Like, right. 'Cause I'm not the greatest sometimes at taking my own advice, but when I hear myself like, or, it's just, it's a constant reminder of like, oh wait, you know, apply what you're doing now into your own self, and right. you know, that could help, or take what you've learned and help this band figure out what they could, you know, could or be or whatever. Just apply all of it. It's a great way to just to keep staying fresh with it. And I really love production. I really love, you know, being able to work with the bands that I get to work with. It's a really, really cool thing. It's awesome. Like to, I do songwriting a lot as well. That's sort of the you know, one of my favorite things to do. Like anytime I get down and start writing and just start a stream of conscious weird stuff happening, like I dig that, you know. So I feel very fortunate and lucky to be able to do it, because it's obviously helped sustain through times when it would have in the past maybe seemed like, you know, tough to continue to stay relevant in music. So
sure. No, it's funny that you say that, and it's I think it was just made me think of something really quick. I remember back in the day, Will from Aiden was telling me they took a meeting with John Feldman. And they maybe even recorded like a demo or something with John Feldman. And they didn't end up going with him for the record. And they probably should have in hindsight, right? Because John Feldman's incredible. But but I guess like they were working on it, and he had these kind of songs that were, you know, unconventional in terms of the structure. And John Feldman kind of said, okay, we're not going to use any of these songs. We're going to write this song, and it's going to be like, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, and we're going to do that 12 times, and that's going to be your record. And that was made them feel very uncomfortable, you know, in terms of, you know, a band trying to express yourself. And it's funny because I when he said that, I was like thinking about Goldfinger. I'm like, their songs aren't like that.
Right.
They have tons of songs that are like unconventional structure. And you know, now I think about your music and I think of that exact conversation probably happening. You know, when a band comes in and they have these songs and you're like, okay, well, this part's like, we got to cut this part out. And then this is what's going to be the chorus now. Or this chorus you think is the chorus is really a pre-chorus. We have to write another chorus. You know, like these kind of structures. But then when it's you and you're the writer, then you're like, wait a second. No. This is my art, man.
Yeah. It's so weird to think about. And like, I think that's sort of like why with this new record, like I approach it so differently. I'm like, you know, it was this weird dark thing. And then I'm like, I feel extremely cheesy saying it, but I had this like dream of like I woke up in the middle of the night and I'm like, wait a second. Like I need to put a chorus on the, cause I like always fight against choruses with my own stuff. But when somebody comes in or I'm writing with someone, I'm like, no, you need like a pretty tight chorus here. It's not good enough. And like for some reason I just always go against it. Like our whole last record, I don't think it had one hook. And you know, sort of why I had to do this one a little bit differently, because I'm like, you gotta start like be artistic, but at the same time, like remember, like, you know, I use like a pizza shop analogy with everybody. You're not gonna have like a pizza shop and advertise pizza but then have like only sell bologna on the inside or something like that. You know, it's like I feel like really honing in on those things and production, that's where doing it full time pretty much is where, you know, really makes you think about things a little bit differently.
Right.
But yeah, always fight against choruses. I don't know why.
Has there been any bands you recorded people might not know they should check out? A lot of people listen to this for new music.
Oh, cool. Well, this band just left. They're called Small Words. They're from Indiana. They're awesome. Small Words. They're actually like really, really cool. I'm very excited for their future. I did recently Aaron West, the guy from the Wonder Years, his solo stuff, getting ready to do another Wonder Years thing. And then like I think the thing about like the like a currently working production right now, I'm on a break, and this band is from St. Louis. So just seeing people from everywhere and sort of like you know, being able to just dive deep is like, it's awesome. So I love especially helping younger bands, because it's like, you know, I always tell people I have like at this point almost just about 20 years of bad ideas and failures that I can help people avoid a little bit.
Right. I love the self-deprecating Ace. That's the way to go.
That's my favorite way to be.
Yeah. Well, this new record, I mean, wow, it's really, really good. It comes out September 27th on Rise Records. And talk about the tour you're doing too. You're going to be leaving your studio behind, leaving your family behind, going out for a pretty long time.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Do you like getting back in the van, bus, bandwagon, whatever you guys are touring in? Do you still like that? Does that still kind of drive you? Or is it like, okay, this is just something I have to do to promote my music?
I think I love playing shows. I'll always love, you know, playing and, you know, having that moment with the crowd or whatever it is. It's, that will always, I think, get me psyched. But you know, sitting in a van or a bandwagon for an extended amount of time, I'm probably not the most excited about, but, and especially being away from my family at this point is like one of the, it's one of the weirdest feelings, you know, having to be away. I do a lot of fly-in days. I fly in whenever I can, then it makes sense. Or for the family will come out, like they right. spent a week in California on the last run, which was right. really nice. But, you know, I try and do that. That's probably the hardest challenge at this point is just, you know, missing soccer games. Like I was coaching baseball this last season for my son's team.
Oh, and cool. That's fun.
Had to leave within like the last, like the championship game I missed because we had to go on tour.
Oh,
and
man.
It's just like yeah. those little things that are, yeah. that are hard. But, they enjoy it. They love it. So it makes
it
easier.
I didn't know you were a baseball fan.
I love sports. I love the sports. I cool. it serves as a great distraction for me, I think, yeah. because as you know, like you're constantly wrapped up in this insane thing and it'll drive you mad if you don't have something to like at least, you know, give yourself a little bit of time. But yeah, I love baseball, dude. We were short on umps, okay? And I don't know if anybody you know, has ever had to do this or, you know, but I had to umpire a couple games and people just ripping on me first inning, just going. I've never felt like
you were home plate umpire.
Home plate umpire for two games, dude. And it's a brutal thing. I don't get nervous on stage or playing in front of like however many people, but you put me behind there and I have to like listen to parents yell at me. Like I've never felt so uncomfortable.
Oh my God. I've never done it. I mean, there's like, a lot of umpires, I mean, even at the low level, they go to like school at least for like a yes. whole day to yeah. figure out like to learn like what a strike or a ball. Like I wouldn't know.
Right.
Maybe it's I know very, on TV, but yeah. I mean, if I'm standing there behind, I'd just be more worried about getting hit with a bat or like something like that, man. Like,
yeah.
Jeez.
I was talking to Aaron from Copeland and he was telling me that he went for, because when, I guess when they, a couple years ago, he went through the whole like ump coaching like class and whatnot, and he was like trying to do it for games, and he was telling me how brutal it is, and this is like right before I had to ump, and I'm like, oh man, like I'm not looking forward to this, but yeah, it's like it's a real thing, and people get fired up.
Oh man, I know. Damn, are you a Phillies fan?
I am a Phillies fan.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's exciting with Bryce Harper and everything. I mean, I wish they were playing a little better, but
yeah, it's a roller coaster of emotions, that's for sure, around here.
And a very tough division.
Yeah,
very tough
and
division.
I mean, not only that, like you're in Philly, so I love Philly, but it is, I think, it can pivot so quickly about loving or hating its players or like teams. It's a crazy place to be a fan, but
sports there are crazy. I mean, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
they just won a Super Bowl. Okay. You won a Super Bowl. Like let's just calm down for a couple years.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. They're just as aggressive as always.
Oh my God.
But,
yeah.
That's okay. I got a couple fan questions. This one says, this is from Andre. He says, any plans for a 20-year tour for all of this? And he says, why in the fuck was Lilac delayed so long? Little passion
right.
from Andre, as to be
all
expected.
All right, that is a little passion. we haven't thought about anything like with the 20-year tour. I'm sure when the time comes, we'll probably do something.
Okay.
And then it was pushed back. Lilac was pushed back, I think. You know, the first time it was ready to come out, I forget exactly what happened. Maybe something contractually didn't happen in time or something to where we had to do a tour and it didn't, the window closed quicker than we thought and it had to be pushed till after. And then it was like, all right, well, it can't come out now. So we have to wait till next spring. And then it was like, we're going to add more songs. And it was like, okay, we're going to wait until next fall. And it was like that. So it was a bunch of different things.
Okay. Thank you for the answer. Thank you for the question, Andre. And I have another one here from Brendan Potter. He asks, how do you split songs between Ace Enders and A Million Different People, et cetera, et cetera? And also, could he tell me about Growing In? I think he had some crazy way he recorded it.
All right. Yeah, Growing In was a fun one because I had just finished up a record that I was actually mixing at the time. It was the first Aaron West and the Roaring Twenties record, right. And I was mixing it, and every time a song would bounce, because it was before I was bouncing in real time, so I would have like 3 minutes and like 40 seconds. During that bounce, I would grab out my phone and I would write a melody and a progression in that 3 minutes.
So
I
really?
Okay. I would make a little game. Right. So I'd make like a 3 minute voice memo where I would have to come up with a lyric idea, like what the song was going to be about, the chording for the, you know, for the song. And then I would use that voice memo and, you know, I would do that through the whole record. And then like the next week after the record I was done mixing that record, I did, I took those voice memos, zipped them up in a folder, put them opened up in Pro Tools. And if you listen to the record, you could hear the voice memo. I didn't use a click. I just used the voice memo as it's actually throughout the whole record. So the voice memo of the acoustic guitar and me like talking, saying weird things and like little lines are in the record. So I played it to the voice memo of every song. And I played the drums to the voice memo, then played the bass to the voice memo, played the guitar to it, and so forth.
That is crazy.
Yeah, it was a fun experiment. I actually have a whole documentary about it as well that never came out.
Oh, okay.
I had a videographer with me who, during the recording process, I was like, I think this is going to be a cool way to do it. And then, you know, we did it, we made it, and it, I then got distracted with like the next Early November record and I never did anything with it. I actually just ended up putting it up on Bandcamp, like a real just DIY thing.
Wow. Yeah. That's crazy. The only thing I can think of that I can relate to is we were doing a record one time and, you know, we did the drums first. So we had like two or three days of drums booked. And at the end of the last day we were done and we didn't really have, like, we had this beautiful studio and we brought out this like kind of camera guy. So I had this idea to like give ourselves an hour to write a song all together and then record the drums for it and then just do it. Right. So that was the idea. So we literally did it. There was, I guess it was recorded and we wrote the song and I remember thinking it was like pretty good. And Paul went in and like smashed the drums in like, you know, three takes. And literally like I forgot that ever happened until like 3 years later when the producer was like, hey, whatever happened to that like hour song? And I was like, oh fuck, what did happen to that song? Cause we got so immersed in the other, the record and everything. And I was so concerned about that. I completely forgot. And I don't know where, I can't remember how the song goes.
No way. It's gone.
I don't know where the footage is. Like, who the documentary guy, like, I don't even remember who recorded, like who taped it.
Wow.
And I guess the drums exist somewhere unless it got deleted. So I don't know. People are probably like, what is he talking about? And I honestly, like, this has come back. This is from like 2011 or 2010. This happened. So I wonder if the song's any good, but yeah. Anyway.
Dude, it's a hit. It's gotta be.
It's got that ever so sweet vibe, man. So, and his, other question before was, how do you split the songs up between your projects? Right. Is it just kind of what you read at the time?
Yeah, it's just like that. And I think Growing In is a perfect example of that. Like, I was just in that moment, I was just like, dude, I just want to try and write a song in 3 minutes and then use it as my, you know, click. And I, you know, and then was immediately after that, I just uploaded it to Spotify and whatnot, and then went on to do the next Early November record. So it was like whatever I'm doing at the moment.
Cool, I love it, man. Cool. Well, dude, thanks so much for taking the time. The new record comes out September 27th, and the tour with Early November with Have Mercy opening up. Great band. Brian is a friend of the show. That's awesome. On sale now. Awesome. Is that on sale now?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So, what else to tell the people before I let you go?
Oh man, I just, Thanks. I have to say, like, you know, I truly appreciate being able to do this. And I want to say thank you to you for having me. Seriously.
Oh, of course,
I've been
man.
Wanting to do it. People have been telling me for such a long time, like, you know, we got to talk. And I'm glad that it actually, we were able to do it.
It's funny, you know, when I started this show, I put together just like a short list of, you know, whatever, 15, 20 people that I would like to talk to, you know, I'm like, people that I kind of know that I can, you know, that'll do it. And you're on that list.
Oh, wow.
And here we are like almost 200 episodes later and finally
that's
doing
so crazy.
It. So
but, I think it's awesome that you do it. I love it. I think it's killer. And
thanks,
man. it's really, really cool thing to do.
Thanks,
it's
man.
Awesome to see.
So I'm going to play one of the two tracks that's released from the record. Again, I forgot the names. Which one should I play for the people? I'll play it right now.
I Dissolve. Let's go with that one.
I Dissolve. Here it is.
Yes,
Unleash Your Syndrome. Thank you, Ace.
Yeah, thank you.
I Dissolve, a brand new one from the upcoming record Lilac, which comes out September 27th on Rise Records. You can go over to riserecords.com. You can pre-order the record, and you should. You don't want to miss this one. I mean, you won't. This is going to come out. This is a game-changing record. And make sure you go see them on tour. They're going all over the place. It's nice. You don't get to see a band like this do tours like this every day. So definitely not to be missed. I want to thank Ace so much. I want to thank Becky, his publicist, for being a sweetheart as always. And I want to thank you for listening to this. Make sure you subscribe, tell a friend, tell a loved one. Check out the All Access Club. Check out iconic.com/LSS. Check out rockabilia.com. These are two amazing sponsors that just do awesome, awesome stuff for the show. And really, really, it's just great. I couldn't be happier. And we got so many good guests coming up over the next few weeks. On that note, I'll leave you with the final of the tunes. I gotta just play the other song. I gotta play the other song. Here it is, Hit by a Car in Euphoria by Early November. Peace and love. We'll see you next time.
We keep sailing. Depression has become my old friend. We're so fond of all my weakness. But I will tie him to the biggest piece of lead. Well, no, 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 cause I'm so good at hiding it. Down deep under the water where I float. So calm. Can't afford a tour guide. Walking along to the far by the way. Hillsides, ups and downs, roads to cross out, the vault we cast out, and I could bring a serious end to the sadness if I got hit by a car. That I wouldn't see another day, and it's not what I want to have. Fall into silence. So.